You know, if a cracker's known for anything in the world, it's his hospitality. I've never been to a cracker's house in my life that they haven't been glad to see me. And whatever they have, they always share with you. You're just as welcome to spend the night as anything in the world. They're not a bit ashamed of who they are or what they have. It might be a pallet on the floor, and they might have beans and rice, but whatever it is, you're welcome. A few weeks ago, old Jimmy Strickland spent the night with me from up here in Mica City, and he said, "You know, Miss Iris, every time I come here, I feel like I'm at home." And that's the way it is with a cracker. And you know, there's no put-on among crackers. There's no fancy. When you go to see them, you eat what they got. And you usually love it. This guy a while ago, he said, "What if I don't like swamp cabbage?" I said, "Well, that'll be good. It'll be more left for somebody else." I said, I could have brought 150 swamp cabbage, and we would have eaten every one of them. Crackers are very plain people, but they are people of their word. If they tell you something, they're going to do it. You don't have to worry about them being fake or anything like that. And they eat very simple things. Now, when I was growing up, we never ate. I told the crowd yesterday, I don't know if you were there or not, I said, there's no cracker that I knew of ever eating a gator tail. We had to skin too many of them for the skins, and they got a musky scent about them. And I'm telling you right now, I'd have to be really poor to eat a gator tail. I'll guarantee you that. We don't eat possum. We don't eat coon. We eat venison. We eat wild turkey. We eat quail. We eat a soft-shell turtle. That's the only kind of turtle we eat. Mama could fry up a soft-shell turtle. You know, a few years ago, maybe not even a year, about 2 years ago, I went down to Miami. They had this big deal on cracker culture. And on the walls, they had these great big pictures, great big humongous pictures. And they had a panel. And I was on the panel with everybody else on there, a PhD and Iris a cracker. But they had this long, and so they wanted you to pick out a picture that really depicted cracker life. And so they had an old, you can see these old arthritic hands. And my mom had the same kind of hands, and they showed this old woman cutting up this deer. And it reminded me, I said, I picked that picture, is depicting cracker life more than any of the rest, because it really reminded me of my mother. She could cut up a deer, and we didn't cut up deer like they do today. They take them to the grocery store, and they saw them out there in Indian Town, just saw off the steaks and stuff. But Mama cut them up in little teeny chunks like this. No membrane, no nothing in there, just little chunks. And she salted and peppered it and rolled it in flour. Get your grease real hot and put it in there, and you turn it real quick because it doesn't take it long to cook like beef. It cooks real quick. Turn it real quick. And a big dinner for us would be a great big platter of fried venison and rice and gravy and a big pan of biscuits and real sweet iced tea. That was dinner for a cracker. But I'm telling you, folks, there's a world of difference between crackers and rednecks. Now, don't never call a cracker a redneck. If you do, you make a serious, serious, serious mistake. In fact, it might be you're a demise if you do that. Because a cracker a redneck is proud of his ignorance. But a cracker has always respected education, although he didn't have any. And you know, he's a very unique, they're very unique people. They can make do with anything in the world. If they got a job to do, they'll figure out some way to do it. And they'll figure out what they got there to do it with. And if they don't, then they do without it. But they are really people that you can depend on. And cooking, swamp cabbage was a very important part of our diet. They were free. They're nutritious. We love them. You all don't have them so much up here. I looked all over the place. I don't see no cabbage trees much up here. But down in South Florida, we got thousands of them. People worry about cutting down a tree. I said, honey, every tree has thousands of berries on it. And they all fall off, make other cabbage trees. And so you just have to pick one the right size. Now, Harold is going to show you. He's going to give you a demonstration about how you cut up a swamp cabbage.
Yeah. I ain't a man of many words, but I can tell you what I want to. This cabbage over here is, I left a bud in it where y'all can see how it come up. But when I go to the... Whenever I go, out there in them woods to cut me a cabbage, well, I like to get them that I can just cut off about waist high. I go in there with a cane knife and I cut all these things off here, or a chainsaw. I didn't used to have a chainsaw, but now I'm a little more fancier. I got a chainsaw, I go down there and cut all these boots off. The fans, and I also look at them as a male and female, these cabbage. Some has berries and some don't. The male don't have the berries. They long leaf cabbage and a short leaf cabbage. Well, I like the long leaf. They're a little bit sweeter, but any of them's good. But I walk up there to it and I take my axe handle, and from where the bud comes out right there, down there is the head of the cabbage. And that's where I circle that whole cabbage, cut it solid, but your boots falls off, a lot of them. And I may have to make two circles to get them off there. A lot of times I can cut them 7 or 10 minutes. But then whenever I get the boots off there, I cut it down. That head there's got a bitter on it. But I just leave that on there till I get ready to cut it up and pot. But I usually cut this one off about along there, where I won't have so much to handle. It'll be like this one. And so when I start cut it up, well, this here end has got bitter on it. I cut all that bitter off until I see all the rings of them boots. And then I take them boots off down to its tender. And I cut up tender stuff in that pan until the next boot gets tough. And then I take that boot off and keep on doing that till it gets it all cut up. And then it's ready to go in the pot. And that's about all they are to it, I guess. That's the swamp cabbage story. I'm gonna cut this one up. I'm gonna cut this one up while you watch me.
Now, is the boot is the various layers of that?
This is the boot right here. This is the boot. And there's still little layers of boots on there. And he'll show you in just a minute. He'll cut that first boot off.
Every boot's got a thin side to it. And that's where you cut it like that, and it falls right off.
And see, if you're a bunch of young'uns, you just stand around and gnaw on the boot, on the tender part of the boot. If you're a kid, you can take this right here and eat that part off of it. It's pretty darn good, too. That's what... Yeah, well, just a taste of the bitter ruins a whole pot of cabbage. And cows love to eat on these things. No, that's a palmetto. That makes a tree, but it's just a young cabbage tree. If he left it alone, it'd grow up and just be a regular cabbage tree. But you got to understand that there's thousands of them there. You got to clear them out some, you know. And that's I don't cut them all time in my pasture, and I got plenty of big cabbage trees the cows can get under. But you still have to clear them out. You know, they'd take over your whole pasture. They're like the Brazilian pepper and all that other trash stuff. No, you can't eat them when they're old. No, they grow on out of that. It's just a certain stage. It's just like he told you. They have to be about waist high. No, you can't eat them then. Mm-mm. They don't have no bud in them then. And that's what you eat. You just got to eat that tenderest part, you know. Well, it's a tree, honey, And then, but that's how he whacks it off and starts in. See? It has that just, it looks just like that on the inside of there. Just like, just exactly like that on the inside of there. But, you know, we cleared them off before, because we had to haul them up here in our van, you know. But they're very, very good. They're very good. Did you eat any yesterday? No? Well, they're very good. Huh? That's a part, the part that's sitting on the ground. It come on down. See, what he done is he just, like that tree was growing there like that. They just cut it off there. It, you know. And then, no, well, he's took some of it off there, but not a lot. We wanted to leave some on there to show you what it looked, you know. No. The tree looks just like a cabbage tree, just like a sable palm tree. You know what a sable palm tree looks like. And it has, you know, it'll get to where it's got the trunk. You know, you can't eat that. You got to eat it at this certain size. Just a lot of things you can't eat when it gets too big. You know, you got to be just right. Heck yeah, and it's good, too. Well, when you're young and you eat it raw, when you grow up you cook it. That's right. Depends on how hungry you are. They grow well, honey. I'll tell you the honest to God truth. I don't know. I'm from South Florida. I was born and raised in the same town my whole life, but they don't grow. I think they only grow down there in South Florida. I don't think they grow up here in this. I haven't seen no cabbage trees up here. So I don't think they grow up here. See, you can eat that. That's not bitter. But it's too tough to cook, you know. There. Now this part, you could eat some on that. Just take it and... Well, what we do is you can fry bacon. If you're a Seventh-day Adventist, you can put some butter in there. It don't make no difference. But you fry a little bacon in there. Then you put your cabbage in there, and you don't put a whole lot of water. You can cook them to death. You know, you just put just like you was gonna cook a garden green cabbage, something like that. Don't cover them. You know, just put some in. And then you put salt and pepper and just a little dab of sugar. Not a lot of sugar, just a dab like that. And, just a dab. A little dab will do you. And you cook them till they're tender, which takes just about an hour. Now, on this little old Mickey Mouse stove we got here, it takes a little bit longer. We weren't really set up for the crowd. Bob Stone neglected to tell me there'd be all this many people. What he said was, Miss Iris, would you come down there and cook a few swamp cabbage to taste? When I got here, I could have brought a pickup loader truck of swamp cabbage, and it wouldn't have been too many. But that's the way you cook them. And when they're, now a lot of people cook them. They put tomatoes in them, you know, and they do all kind of different ways. But this is the best way we cook the swamp cabbage. You taste them, and they'll be the that's the best way to cook them. Well, I would think you could freeze it. I don't know why you couldn't freeze it. I've never frozen none, but you can, have you? You can freeze it after you cook it, you know. See, one thing about it, it'll turn black. See, that's why he cuts it up in that water. It'll turn black. You can't, you know, it'll turn. Just like a potato. You know how you peel a potato? And if you don't put a potato in water, it'll turn black. Well, that cabbage will turn black. That's what it'll do. But if you really like it, now the Cracker Horse people meet down at my ranch, and then we cook probably 25 or 30 cabbage. We brought 12 up here, and I'm telling you, we said, oh my goodness, we should have brought a pickup truckload of them up here. But we didn't know We didn't know. Ignorance is bliss, see? Yeah, we're cooking some. We'll give you a taste of it. You'll like it. Well, most old crackers cook rice and tomato gravy. I don't know. Have any of you ever cooked tomato gravy? Do you know what tomato gravy is? This guy knows. Well, we cook rice and tomato gravy, and so that's what we cooked up for you. We fry the bacon in. See, everything the South cooks is terrible, but we live to be 100 years old, you know. I'm 78, so everything we cook is wrong. So please don't quote me if any of your teachers or nutrition experts, well, don't quote me, but we fry a little bacon in there, which we do in just about everything we cook, and then we fry some onions. We take the now at home I leave the bacon in there, but I can't put it in these little cups, so I had to take the bacon out and fry the onions in there, put the flour in there, put the canned tomatoes in there, and thicken it till it's right. Add you a little water if you don't have quite enough tomatoes. And that's how we make the tomato gravy. So we cook rice and tomato gravy, and we fry just some cornbread. It's we love when I was a kid growing up, my dad, we cow hunted all the time, and it was a long way. And what he would do was we'd take a little old thing of flour, a little old container of flour. We had a little old flat can of syrup that we carried in our saddle pockets. We stopped for dinner. Daddy would put a piece of white bacon. We'd cut it by the slab then. You bought it by the long slab. He'd put it on a palmetto fan. We'd build up a little old fire. He'd put that piece of white bacon on that palmetto fan and stick it up by that fire. We had a peach can with a bale on it, and we'd pour a little water on there. It'd cook, and he'd cook us that white bacon. And then when we had a little old skillet, and he would take flour and a little bit of salt and pond water and mix up a little bit of dough. And in that pan, he'd fry some of that white bacon and put that dough in there like that. And he could flip it over, make a flapjack, and we'd eat it with, put some of that syrup on it. Every now and then I'd take my highfalutin grandchildren out, and I said, I'm going to teach you how. I'm going to teach you some depression cooking. Teach you some real cowboy cooking. But this is what we cook. We cook rice, tomato gravy, swamp cabbage, and some cornbread. Thank you, folks.
Now, would you have anything for dessert? Did you ever make no preserves or anything?
Syrup and biscuits.
Did you make your own syrup?
No.
In the old days?
There's somebody in Indiantown made it, and he always gave us plenty. Okay. Dick Walden was the syrup maker.
Well, thanks so much to Iris Wall and Harold Johnson over here for telling us about cracker cooking. And please go over, see how they're cooking, and get yourself a sample or two.